Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts, episode 101. We are your resident Star Trek podcast here on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am your host, Derek, and I have my two guest hosts who have been recurring now for the last six episodes as we cover Star Trek Lower Decks. Zach.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. And Ray.
Hey.
Hey, hey. And we are here, of course, to talk about Star Trek. We're going to be talking Star Trek Lower Decks, episode 6, Terminal Provocations. So spoiler warnings for that. We're also going to talk a little bit about Star Trek Day. This past week on Tuesday was Star Trek Day, the 54th anniversary of the Star Trek franchise. And they did a panel, a 3.5 hours worth of virtual panels from all across the Star Trek universe, from the original series up through the still yet to be produced Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Zach, did you watch any of the panels from Star Trek Day?
I didn't. I've caught a few clips here and there. I know I wanted to, but like we talked about last week, I was working the whole time it was happening. And so I have since caught a few clips here and there, but not an entire panel, which is a bummer.
Well, they're all on YouTube, all of them.
So that's good. I'm glad to know that.
You can go and watch them. Ray, you've seen several of them.
Yes, I think I've watched 3 or 4 at this point.
The only one that I haven't watched is actually, funny enough, is the Picard TNG panel, which was Will Wheaton hosting, moderating with Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes. That's the only one I haven't gotten to, but I've watched all the others.
That one should have been called Me and My Two Dads.
I think that would have been fine. That would have been a fine title.
Right?
Well, we didn't get a whole lot of news from Star Trek Day. We did get a brand new season 3 trailer for Star Trek Discovery, which brought out some interesting stuff. We've all seen the trailer.
Yes.
Kitty!
We could talk about Grudge Cat.
Yes.
If we'd like. You can follow Grudge Cat on Twitter.
I did not know that. I'm behind the times. Let me grab my phone here.
He will instantly follow you back.
So. That's not true.
Interesting.
That's bad.
That's not true.
Only if you're a female.
No, I didn't follow Grudge Cat. Derek did, and he got a follow back.
Grudge Cat does follow me. I am very happy about it. It's pretty cool. But Grudge Cat, is very selective for their followers.
What makes you so special?
I'm very much into Star Trek. I mean, Grudge Cat only follows 76 people, and I'm one of them, and that's pretty cool. I feel pretty cool about that.
That is cool.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about that. So there is a cat in Star Trek, Mr. Booker's cat. Booker is a new character that we're getting here in season 3.
Yes.
He's been more or less co-stars in the trailer for the season. Mm-hmm. Anything stand out from the trailer that either solidified your thoughts for season 3 or maybe threw you in a different direction for where you thought things were going to go?
So this is where I wanted them to go from the beginning. I wanted them to be ahead, because doing a show that close to another Star Trek show limits you. You're kind of pigeonholed a bit, and this finally gives the current cast their own room to breathe and work, and I think they're gonna do great without established characters already, no Sarek, no Pike, just themselves. And I'm really looking forward to that because I think the talent there is absolutely insane, and they deserve this. They really do.
Zach, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with Ray. This is what I always wanted from the beginning. As soon as it was rumored, I wanted this. And then there was that moment about halfway through season one where they made this big jump, and I thought, oh shit, is this my moment? Like, are they going to be 100 years in the future? Like, can we like finally like get into our own canon? And no, we were in the Mirror Universe, which turned out beautifully. And I enjoyed that whole plot and everything that happened in season one and season two. But yeah, I'm glad they're finally where we thought we were going to be. The trailer was great. You know, I liked seeing the different species highlighted. I like the general tone. I like now that we know that, you know, people didn't leave the Federation. There was, something that killed them off, which is not happy, but there's a force. There's a force to fight against. And I don't know, like, I'm super depressed about current events and just life in general for the most part lately, like a lot of us are.
Yeah.
And I was watching this trailer. I just started work and I took a break because I saw the trailer came up. And so I was watching the trailer and I honestly teared up a little bit. I got a little emotional and I'm like, God damn, what is wrong with you? I'm like, oh yeah, you're depressed because you're living through multiple global crises consecutively. And that trailer had just the right amount of hope that you come to expect from Star Trek. And I really liked seeing that. And so, I'm excited.
Fair enough.
We need something to hope for. It's that line from Futurama. We need Star Trek to give us hope for the future.
That moment.
Right.
That moment where Burnham just screams out in utter joy because they're not on a deserted planet.
Yeah.
Life signs. Like, she's by herself. So I imagine that it's not just an expression of her, like, not being alone on the planet, but also it means that her crew could be alive too, because she was ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So it was just such a wonderful moment.
Yeah. Sonequa Martin Green is stellar. Mm-hmm. And I think that from the looks of the trailer for season three, she's really getting an opportunity to stretch a bit, you know, because Michael Burnham is a very logical character and can come off a little bit cold, especially in season one.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was kind of on purpose, right? To show how she was mainly raised on Vulcan by Vulcans, and that had shaped her personality quite a bit. But she is still human. She's been through a lot in just the two seasons that we've seen. And this, I think, is her first opportunity as an actor to really be able to extend the range of emotion and personality. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I agree.
Absolutely.
I also was surprised to see that the Federation is, you know, not quite in shambles per se, but definitely nowhere near where it used to be. I thought that was a ruse, and it was just to throw everybody off, and the Federation was going to be just the way it was. But I'm curious to see what the burn is. You know, what that means. There's some, you know, talk about it destroyed just ships, not necessarily organic life. So the Federation planets might still exist as they were, but they're all separated from each other. That could be an interesting thing to discuss. So I'm curious. I'm definitely curious to see where things are headed. But one little detail that's in the trailer, so I'm going to say it's not a spoiler, Saru, at least some point in season three, is going to wear 4 pips.
Yeah.
Which is a big freaking deal because, you know, there was a lot of talk at the end of season two about who was going to be captain. Would it be Saru? Would it be Burnham? And there's good arguments for both of them. There really are. And they would both, you know, they're both incredibly strong actors. Doug Jones is phenomenal as a creature actor, and Saru is just so freaking cool and goes so far in season two. I'm kind of glad to see Saru get that type of rank because, first, we've never had our primary ship captained by an alien.
Correct.
We've never had that as our primary character. And so that's a really cool concept, something that we haven't done before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, we also haven't had a black woman be our primary captain, right? We've had a black man and we've had a white woman, you know, so that would also be new in its own way. So either way, I think we would have been good, but I'm excited to see Captain Saru.
I am too. I think at this point, his character kind of deserves it a bit more. Right now, Burnham is still very paying for her mistakes in the first couple episodes and proving her, I guess, redemption to her friends and crew. So I think, you know, a few more seasons, she can have her own ship, totally. But I really love the idea of Captain Saru.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
And just seeing what his character goes through in season two was super fascinating. It was one of my favorite parts of the season, frankly.
His short track was really good as well.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Probably the best.
And, you know, look, it's not easy acting through prosthetics at all. We've seen people struggle with even just fake sets of teeth. You know, we're talking through the prosthetics you'd see from Klingons or Ferengi, right. Let alone something like this, the Kelpian, where he's wearing special boots. So he has, you know, like hooved feet, and the way he walks is completely, you know, alien and non-human. And his whole face and head is completely covered. He's got those cool contact lenses. Doug Jones is able to bring non-human things to life in a way that, frankly, I don't think anybody else can.
Well, if you're going to do something like that, if you're going to have a character work in prosthetics, they knew what they were doing when they cast Doug Jones. Mm-hmm. They were not playing around. Like, it's a really great thing that Michael Dorn and Armin Shimerman and Rene Auberjonois was able to get used to the prosthetics and work through them. But just hiring somebody out of the gate who has worn them a million times is probably your best bet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So moving on from that, we didn't get a whole lot from most of the other groups. We got to see some really cool get-togethers that haven't been a thing in quite some time. Basically, the primary main cast of Enterprise, including Scott Bakula, were together, which was really just fun to see all of them together. Most of the DS9 cast and Voyager cast were together, which was just, again, great to see everybody. And then we got our Strange New Worlds panel, which was very, very interesting. We got some producers, some writers, as well as our three primary cast members, Anson Mount, Rebecca Romijn, and Ethan Peck, who are playing Captain Pike, Una Number One, and Spock, respectively. We didn't get, you know, a ton of detail, of course, on what the show is. They're still writing it. They're still breaking the episodes, and they're hoping to start production in the near future. But we got some cool behind-the-scenes stuff. So, for example, the series is supposed to kind of lend itself back to the old Star Trek ideology of episodic, hopeful storytelling. So each episode will be an episodic story, relatively self-contained, like we saw in TOS, TNG, and Voyager. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of Enterprise and DS9. But the characters are going to see long, season-long plus arcs of things that impact them for more than just those one-episode stories, which... Right, were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that's very DS9, because starting off with the first like 3-4 seasons, they did that. Each character had an arc, but, you know, episode to episode, there was a smaller plot contained in the episode. And that was a very early or mid to late 90s kind of thing, you know. Zach and I are huge fans of Whedon. From then, not really, not so much now, but
yeah.
That was a very Buffy and Angel thing, you know, overarching for the series, but each episode was kind of individualized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that, because I like the idea of the more self-contained stories, because that's what Pike's Enterprise was doing. They were exploring Strange New Worlds every week. And that didn't work so well on DS9 because they weren't doing that. They were primarily on the station. They were primarily dealing with Bajor. So they had these recurring things. But the Enterprise during Pike and Kirk's era shouldn't be like that because they're never really at the same place twice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that they're taking that into account. There's teases about what Una's background, her origin story, is going to be. And it's supposed to be really unique because number one doesn't have a lot written about her. There's some stuff in the books about what happens after the cage. Of course, none of that is canon. And Rebecca Romijn has an opportunity to help craft what that character becomes. So there's some cool stuff in there. I'm really excited about it. I don't know about you guys, but I'm anticipating that show probably more than anything else Star Trek right now.
I think that's fair.
I also think out of everything, I mean, I guess there's the other Nickelodeon show coming up and a few other rumored projects, but really this show is the one piece of Star Trek that we've seen a teaser of because it was a big part of Discovery season 2, but we haven't gotten their own thing. And we're all watching season 2 of Discovery thinking these people need their own show. And it didn't seem like it was going to happen, and then it happened. So now like we've had some of Lower Decks. We got to see all of season 1 of Picard, and you know, we discussed that, the three of us together. We had mixed feelings about it. Not all bad, not all good. And then we've got Discovery now in its third season, really hitting its stride. And so I think it's natural to be most excited about Strange New Worlds because this represents a new and unique piece of Star Trek that has been teased, and it's basically already gotten its backdoor pilot. They've proven to us mm-hmm. that they've got the writers and the actors that can really make this something special. And so, yeah, I would mirror your excitement on that just because it's got a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And as a straight man, I have no problem saying Anson Mount is fine as hell. For the record.
That is a very attractive cast.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah, all three of them, really.
Right?
But, I mean, let's look at the Discovery cast. I mean, they're all pretty attractive people, too. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
They are.
Absolutely.
These are some good-looking actors, you know?
For sure. For sure.
All right. Well, was there anything else that came out from Star Trek Day that you thought was worth mentioning here?
No.
We've got some blood wine coming out if you're interested in such things. They've released some Star Trek wines over the last year or so, and they've announced two more, one of which is a Klingon blood wine. So you can get that. I believe a bottle is $50. So if
to piggyback off of that, their merch was really good. I am ready to give them my paycheck.
Yeah, and that's been a fair complaint, especially during the last decade or so that we've only had these movies before the shows really took off, that, you know, the Star Trek, you know, the JJ verse, the Kelvin verse movies, they didn't do merchandising very well.
It was so bad.
And it's been compared often to Star Wars, which on the other hand is great at merchandising, maybe to an excessive degree. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see them kind of correct for that, because there were a few of the, the Star Trek movies that I thought, man, if there had been more merchandise, I would have bought stuff, but there just wasn't there.
To be completely honest, it's truly a bummer that they've kind of moved away from the action figures, because I know that action figures are just an easy thing to collect. They're usually like, they can run the range of inexpensive to crazy detailed expensive statues or something. So I miss that, and I don't think they're doing it.
I expect to see more because McFarlane Toys now has the license, and that's relatively new within the last year. And so I expect them to do something with it. I really do. And maybe that will be Lower Decks action figures. Maybe that will be Discovery. Maybe they're waiting for the Nickelodeon show. I don't know. But I would be very surprised if we don't start seeing more classic action figures in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would hope so.
All right. Well, happy Star Trek Day to everybody, both in here and out there in the universe. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will be talking Star Trek Lower Decks Episode 6, Terminal Provocations. This is your spoiler warning for Episode 6 of Lower Decks. We will be right back.
Oh. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, we're back, guys. Let's do this. Let's talk Star Trek Lower Decks, Episode 6, Terminal Provocations. This episode was really fun, actually. Mm-hmm. I really laughed, I think, more than I did with any of the first five. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if this, you know, is my favorite of the first five or not, but I think it was definitely the funniest.
Yeah.
Of the first five. What are some of your initial
thoughts? This is episode six, babe.
I know.
Okay.
What'd I say?
Never mind. You kept saying the first five. The first five.
I think it was funnier than the first five.
Got it. I'm sorry. I thought you said of the first five and not than the first. Cool. Okay. We're on the same page.
We'll bring it back. We'll bring it back.
Use take two.
So this episode, the senior staff is fairly busy dealing with some scavengers and some old Star Trek technology. And our lower deckers are busy creating the thing or something like it down below. What are some of your thoughts, guys, on this episode? Like, where do you want to start? Did anything jump out to you that you just have to get off your chest?
Oh, man. I mean,
keep talking.
I mean, it was hilarious. I guess the first thing that sticks out to me is the character of Badgie. and part of that's because I love Jack McBrayer of 30 Rock and Wreck-It Ralph fame. He's got a very distinct voice. And that character being hilariously murderous was just, it was really good. I also think this episode did a good job of tying all their plots together as well.
Let's talk about Badgie, because one thing I don't want to overlook is the fact that the guy who voices Badgie voices Mr. Fix-It,
yeah,
but he glitches in this, and glitching is obviously a key plot point in Wreck-It Ralph, and I don't think that was an accident.
Oh, no, I'm sure it wasn't.
Right? That was very on purpose, and I think it was really wonderful to see him go from playing, like, the clean, shiny Mr. Fix-It good guy to this murderous Delta Shield on the holodeck. Also, like, it's a holodeck malfunction. How can you have a Star Trek show without a holodeck malfunction? It was only a matter of time.
Right, and they referenced almost every other holodeck malfunction up to this point in this one 20-minute episode.
So many, so many.
There's been a lot. It was a common plot device.
And like, I mean, you know, some shows used it maybe a little too much. You know, TNG and Voyager used holodeck malfunctions to a pretty large extent.
They did. But I mean, and I don't even want to make excuses, but like when you look, compare TV now to TV then, you have these 26 episode season orders. You're going to have to fill it with something. And the holodeck malfunction was an easy filler. Whereas now, like, most shows are, you know, 13 episodes tops, and that is a really tight story, and it doesn't leave a lot of room for filler. So, yeah, different times of television for sure.
Ray, what did you think of Badgie?
I think it's kind of a coincidence that he played Fix-It Felix without any glitching, and now he's playing Badgie with glitching.
Pssh.
I actually think that, you know, Jack McBrayer is hired to play these evil cartoon characters now because he has such a sweet, unsuspecting voice that when things turn for the worse, you're just not expecting it. And I love that. I think he killed this cameo. I really hope we see Badgie again in the future. I really don't care in what capacity, but
he's always there.
Exactly. I hope it's like an evil Vic Fontaine where he's just constantly running.
Yes.
That would be so amazing.
I support that. He could be the ship's Moriarty.
He could. They kind of like set up for that.
You know, I think that works really well. The whole holodeck sequence went from being absolutely hysterical to really intense and then really sweet, like all like back and forth constantly. It was just a pull on my emotions, and that's a tough balance to do, even like in live action, let alone here, like in animation, where it's a very tight time frame that they're dealing with. But Rutherford and Tindy are so freaking cute together.
Yes.
I mean, I know we're supposed to ship them real hard, and it worked. I do.
Right.
I really just can't wait to see
where Rutherford that goes. Finally admitting that he thinks she's cute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he wants to impress her is fantastic. It really is. And then her just saying, like, you impress me all the time is also great.
Mm-hmm. Very sweet, very heartwarming. And you're right. And I hate to call back to this predecessor now that I feel like it's starting to differentiate itself and become more Trek, but it does remind me of Rick and Morty pulling these tight corners between, like, you know, fucked up humor and then dark and then like heartwarming. Like, it turns these really sharp corners within a 20-minute time span, and I think that's definitely largely important in part to the writing team and their background, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong with comparing it to Rick and Morty. Mike McMahon, you know, he has a style that he uses, you know, and so to ignore that that connection, I think, is just kind of a waste if you know it. I don't know Rick and Morty, so I can't bring that into the conversation, but there's nothing wrong with drawing those comparisons.
Yeah. It was just, for me, in the first few episodes, it was an easy fallback because I'm like, okay, this feels more like Rick and Morty than Star Trek, but now that we've gotten to episode 6, it's found its footing. I feel like it's definitely, you know, struck its own course, but I can see the remnants of, you know, of McMahon's previous experience, which is fun.
I mean, that's fair. That is fair. So we also have our main lower deckers, Mariner and Boimler, are trying to work with their friend Fletcher. And I mean, It didn't go the direction I thought it was going to go, but I was like 100% sure that they were killing off Fletcher in this episode when it started, right? Like when Boimler and Mariner go off to the choo-choo party or whatever by themselves, right? And they leave Fletcher behind. I'm like, well, he's obviously going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get that vibe, or was that just me?
No.
I didn't. Like, he was too overeager and goody-goody. Like, I just didn't trust him from the beginning. I thought he had nefarious motives, like, almost immediately. No one's that pure of heart. So I didn't trust him at all. And
okay. And
honestly, like, he is, I've been thinking about this for the last several hours since I watched the episode, and I think he's my least favorite person in any Trek show ever. I can't find anyone else in my mind that I hate more than him at this point.
Than Fletcher?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, really? Kai Winn still exists.
Oh, I know.
Right?
I know. It's a really close tie. Him and Kai Winn are like tied for number one almost.
Wow. Kai Winn makes me want to hit my TV screen.
Same. Same. Fletcher, but here's why I compare the two. Fletcher made me want to hit my TV screen almost as much in 20 minutes as Kai Winn did as a slow burn over a couple seasons.
Wow.
Oh.
I hated, like, Kai Winn the moment she showed up.
Oh, I did too. But I didn't, like, feel the violent urge to hit my TV until, like, season two. It took me, like, because she shows up late season one, I think, or the season one finale or whatever it was. It took a couple episodes before I'm like, no, like, I want her to die painfully. So,
Okay. All right.
And I got my wish, but
spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. But and that's the thing, like, so I have a long running hatred of Kai Winn over 7 seasons that she deserves every minute of it. But I don't know. Fletcher just, like, he rubbed me the wrong way immediately. And then, like, at every point in the story where, like, he could have redeemed himself, he just doubled down on being a total shitbag. I'm like, I hate you. Like, I'd never want to see you again. Like, this episode could have killed him off and I would have been okay with it. And that's, wow, that's sad. Yeah.
Well, I thought they were going to. I thought that was the direction that they were going. And then Boimler, yeah, and Mariner were going to feel, like, guilt about it, you know, leaving him behind kind of thing.
Right.
But obviously that's not what they did. So no. Instead, he is working on these computer modules, right? These isolinear cores, and he wants it to make him smarter. And that's kind of probably the first plot point of the show that I thought was just kind of silly. Like, mm-hmm, not silly as in like the humor side of things, but just kind of, mm-hmm, like it didn't really work, make any sense or work for me.
This isn't the first time, though, that someone has tried to merge their brain with the computer.
I know. And Barkley has a whole episode about it on TNG. But at least Barkley is already shown to be, like, one of the smartest people on the ship.
Sure.
And has a predisposition to do weird things on the holodeck. And it takes time for him to really connect himself to it and everything. Yeah. This just seemed like one of the dumbest things I've seen a character do.
Right. No, that makes sense. And I guess, I mean, dumb. And also, and again, this harkens back to my immediate hatred of this character. Kai Winn reminds me of, like, abstract religious leaders that I grew up despising from, like, a distance. Whereas Fletcher reminds me of actual people that I've worked with that just immediately pissed me off. And I wanted them gone. So,
well, Ray, what about you? What do you think of any of these aspects to the plot today, this week?
So, first of all, I think I'm in the middle of you guys. I immediately distrusted Fletcher because of how, like, amazing he was, how much they were hyping him up. If they had toned that down a bit, I would have been like, oh, are they going to add a fifth character? Like, that's kind of cool in the middle of the series. I wasn't expecting that, but all right. Instead, he just turned out to be kind of he wasn't really a jerk because he did do all those great things for his friends, right? I think this is a guy who fails upwards, and we've all worked with that person. We've all secretly, like, despised that person or sometimes, you know, not so secretly. And I'm glad that it went down the way it went down. I didn't think he was going to die. But I also didn't see them getting him promoted and, you know, moved, transferred off the ship. So that was kind of funny.
That's fair.
And, you know, without friends, it was really easy for him to get fired on his own. So you can tell that he's been a part of the Cerritos crew for so long because people also had his back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a really good perspective. And, you know, at the end of it, when they get, they basically lie about what happened to get him promoted. And I'm kind of sad we don't get to hear the lie because I'm really curious what it was. And they kept referencing Q's, and so I thought maybe this is where the John DeLancey cameo was going to be, but I guess that's later in the season.
I'm really glad it wasn't, to be honest, because I thought having Q and Jack McBrayer in the same episode would have been a little too much. But,
well, there's another Star Trek cameo in this episode.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Did I miss it? What's up?
The Drukmani captain is voiced by none other than J.G. Hertzel, the man behind
that's right.
Martok.
Yeah.
The greatest Klingon to ever.
Ever.
I forgot. I looked up the IMDb list earlier and I was like, oh, that was him. And then promptly forgot it.
Yeah. Martok is absolutely hands down my favorite Klingon of all time. I'm sorry, Worf. But yeah. Martok is the man, and I would follow him into battle any day. And so having Hertzler back in any capacity is more than welcome. I wish he had been able to play, you know, Chancellor Martok, but, you know, hey, I'll take anything I can get.
Okay, so first of all, I gotta just join that, you know, Martok, Gowron, and Worf, you know, you marry Worf, you fuck Martok, you kill Gowron.
That's
how you do it.
Spot on.
But oh my god, so it's a salvage ship, they don't have weapons, and they're using their tractor beam to toss salvage, like, just crap at the Cerritos. How cool is that? That was so unique. Why haven't we seen that in live action Star Trek? Because that was so clever and just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it was brilliant. We've seen the technology used to push things in very minor capacity on Star Trek before, so this clearly has precedent, but this is the most unique and fun way I've ever seen them do something like this. I thought it was brilliant.
Like, DS9 practically used the tractor beams to tow shit just constantly. It was like, we're just towing this, we're towing that. Like, all right.
I mean, that's usually what they're used for.
Right?
You know, that's their initial point. But I love this idea, because how many times does the Enterprise, like on TNG, come across a ship that's like, well, they've got these little lasers, but they won't even make a dent in our shields. And you're thinking, well, then why do they even have them? And they're like, well, it's to blow up asteroids. I'm like, that doesn't seem like as big of a problem as you'd think.
Right.
So they have no weapons. But this was super clever, right? Because what would happen to a ship if you just threw parts of another ship at it? We never get to see that. I thought it was super cool.
I agree.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love that. I thought it was brilliant. It was really clever. One other bit before we move on from Fletcher is, so they lie about Fletcher, right, to get him promoted off the ship. And where does he go? The Titan. And the Titan is yet another world-building reference here on Lower Decks, because the Titan is currently captained, at least we're supposed to believe, is currently captained by Riker.
Yes.
That is Riker's ship that he leaves on at the end of Nemesis. This is after Nemesis, 10 years after Nemesis. So I can't quite remember the timeline on Picard for when he and Troy...
retires?
Well, they don't technically retire. They're on leave. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they remove themselves from active duty to look after their kids. I don't know exactly when that happens, but I think Riker is still captain of the Titan. So I thought that was pretty cool. We're going to take a quick pause here because Zach has fallen off of the meeting.
Oh no.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. Well, Zach is definitely having some technical issues, so we are going to continue on with the rest of our conversation without him, and hopefully he can join us back next week. So let's get back to it. We've talked about Fletcher.
Yes.
We've talked about the holodeck, and we've talked a little bit about the main bridge cruise story that's been going on there.
Yes.
What other aspects to the episode did you find interesting that you want to make sure that we cover?
So I know it's not a very big part of the episode, but I absolutely loved that the Bajoran engineer was going insane and just really wanted to blow up that ship.
Oh, the tactical officer.
Yeah.
So that's Shax, Lieutenant Shax.
Yeah, I am not really paying attention to the bridge crew since they're not our main characters. And I don't know his name. I don't know the medical officer's name, but...
Tiana.
Oh, that's pretty. But had to reflect on that for a second. But yeah, I thought it was a really good running gag that he just kept begging for permission to fire upon them. And I like the dichotomy of the captain who holds it all together and the crew member who wants to take the offensive right away, and they just bat heads. And, you know, on TNG, that happens between Worf and Picard all the time, but it's never played for comedy, and here it was, and I thought it really worked.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's definitely funny. My worry is that Shax is basically a caricature of Worf, right? He's a big, beefy, hardened, non-human tactical officer who wants to fight and blow stuff up all the time. And that's kind of what Worf was used for on TNG. Now, DS9, his character changes and grows and becomes a lot more complex. But on TNG,
that's very true.
He was basically used in two ways. He got beat up to show how strong an alien bad guy was. Or he would suggest a course of action that was somewhat aggressive or violent that would be shot down. That was really what Worf was used for on TNG. And that's what Shax is, but just kind of exaggerated. You know, and he's like, you know, his eye has a scar, and rather than being Klingon, he's Bajoran, but he's clearly like seen some shit and lived through the occupation and was probably in the underground and all of that type of stuff and fought alongside people like Kira. And like there's a lot of parallels to the personality traits between Worf and Shax. And so he just feels like a caricature in a lot of ways of like how Ransom feels like a caricature of Riker.
That's fair.
And at least younger Riker. And so, like, Captain Freeman doesn't feel that way. Tiana kind of does feel maybe a little like a caricature of Bones. Or Dr. Pulaski, maybe. And so
Freeman seems very grumpy and just a little worn out. Like, she's the only medical officer and she's on duty all the time kind of thing. She has bags under her eyes constantly. And she just... it seems stretched thin.
So, like, from my perspective, it seems like Captain Freeman's the only one of the main bridge crew who isn't a caricature of another character from an older show.
And that's very possible that she also is the one that's most fleshed out, because she's Mariner's mom and she's married to an admiral, or she was married to an admiral. Yeah. We're not quite sure their relationship status.
It's too early to say.
Right. Maybe there's just, you know, we're not quite sure.
Yeah, that's fair. I hope to get more out of these characters, because they're around. They're in every episode, basically.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And they're part of some plot, you know, the A, B, or C. This week it was the C plot, really. And that's fine, because it's a lower deck show. I just don't want them to only be caricatures of somebody who came before.
Yeah, I get that. I really do.
Our four main characters aren't caricatures. They might have traits that have some similarities to other things, but they're not caricatures. They're their own characters. They have their own personalities and their own features and interests that are unique. So I'm hoping that maybe it's too early on to really know.
I think so. I think it definitely might be a little too early, because we're really focused on the main four. And if the show has multiple seasons, then there's no reason why they can't expand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that is fair.
And honestly, I kind of got a vibe that Ransom was more like Kirk than Riker. Still a shadow of a previous character that we're already familiar with, but a different one. That's just me.
And that's a fair comparison too, especially during like the gladiator fight where he rips his shirt off and literally does Kirk Fu moves in the battle. And it leads to an interesting conversation, because there's also a bit of a running joke in older Trek about how the Kirk personality type is essentially demoted with each series. So in the first show, right, he's the captain.
Yes.
And then in TNG, he's the first officer.
Yes.
Right. And then in DS9 early on, it's kind of Bashir, right? So he's he's a lieutenant, but he's the medical officer. And right. then by Voyager, he's Tom Paris, who's literally in prison and only gets out of prison because Janeway needs a hotshot pilot, right?
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of joke that the character just keeps getting demoted through Voyager. And so I guess that's kind of an example here is here's that same kind of character trope again, but back in the first officer position.
Right.
So there you go.
Well, because honestly, the Kirk type doesn't make sense for a lot of these other shows as the captain. You know, it works in the exploration where, you know, they're constantly in danger. They're trying new stuff and he has to be a little reckless with his decisions, fast and quick and on his toes all the time. But he couldn't really, I don't think he can navigate DS9 or Voyager very well. I don't think the Kirk personality could.
Fair. That's fair. Did anything else stick out to you from this episode that you want to make sure we touch on here?
Let's see. We talked about Badgy. We talked about Fletcher. We talked about the bridge crew.
I think we kind of covered all the bases.
Did you kind of want to see what the choo-choo party was?
I was curious about it.
Right.
But like, I kind of appreciate that they didn't show us. It sounded more like they're like actual entertainers who go around ship to ship or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Which is a really great idea that I'm surprised no one has touched on before.
I mean, maybe they were like a hologrammed in or something like that.
That'd be cool.
But yeah, that was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a cute idea.
I agree.
All right.
That's,
well then,
that's all I got.
That's it. All right. Well then, let's go ahead and we'll call it a week here on Red Shirts and Runabouts because I think we've talked about what we need to talk about. We've got more episodes coming. So, a couple of housekeeping items that I think are very important. First, we will be back. You know, we're doing this Thursday nights live on our Facebook group, Red Shirts and Runabouts, Red Shirts and Runabouts Forum on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/group/redshirtsandrunabouts and join us live for that, which would be great.
Mm-hmm.
If not, these episodes come out the following day on Friday. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you get your podcasts. So go ahead and check that stuff out as well. It is possible that we will be releasing off schedule here a little bit. Ray and I are expecting our first child here anytime within the next 1 to 3 weeks. And so it's very possible that a week from now, 2 weeks from now, or 3 weeks from now, we will be busy doing something else rather than being able to record this podcast unless we do it live from the hospital room, which I would not expect us to do. So bear with us if we record or release a little out of sync with that or don't do a live stream, what have you. But we are going to do our best to cover all of our bases. You can find Zach at AvengerZS on Twitter if you would like to talk to him. And you can find Ray at Siren Ray. I am at the Star Trek Dude, and you can find our show at Red Shirts Pod on Twitter. You can find a link there as well to our link tree, which has links to everything you could possibly need for this show if you're having trouble finding us somewhere and want to subscribe.
Oh my God, everything?
Pretty much everything. Yeah. So we appreciate everybody listening in. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Happy Star Trek Day to you. We will see you next time. Live long and prosper. We'll be right back.